This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Well, we have welcomed autumn here in Michigan, many of us with open arms. It's a beautiful, beautiful season in our state. And one of the pleasures of changing seasons is being able to talk with poet and writer Keith Taylor, who joins us now with his picks for our autumn reading books set in Michigan, written by Michigan writers. Keith, good to have you back as always.
Thanks, Cindy. It's a pleasure to be here.
What have you brought from us? And also, what you'll be reading from? Because having you read to us is one of my personal great pleasures here on Stateside.
And it's fun to do. I thought about, we were talking about this, I thought maybe I'd focus on the UP this time.
Let's talk UP.
Everything having to do with the UP. There's a lot of things happening in the UP right now.
Yeah.
Literary things. People don't think about that, but it's true. There's a good writing program at Northern Michigan. There are three literary journals that I know of. So, yeah, and lots of writers either from the UP or going to the UP or still living there who are putting books out, which is great.
Great.
And there's a history of it. The UP, if we go back, Hemingway's great short story, one of the great short stories in American literature, The Big Two-Hearted River, one of the Nick Adams stories from the 1920s, the character, after being damaged by World War I, goes fishing alone in the Upper Peninsula to sort of get physical and spiritual healing. So, you know, there's been a history. One of the great Vietnam novels we have, Philip Caputo's Indian Country, begins and ends in the UP. Our own Jim Harrison has placed several novels there. But there are a bunch of homegrown things now, which is great. I could have picked a bunch of books to talk about, but I wanted to pick some different kinds of things. So I've got three of them.
Great.
I'd like to talk about.
Where are we beginning?
Let's start with the crime writer Steve Hamilton.
Let's.
Okay. Steve's a lot of fun. Like many crime writers, he writes a lot of books. Years ago, he created this fascinating guy named Alex McKnight. And Alex McKnight was a former Detroit cop wounded in a shootout on duty, a shootout that kills his partner. He's left with a bullet lodged close to his heart, so he gets disability. His wife is fed up with him, so he leaves and he goes to the Upper Peninsula. Again, just because he figures he can live there.
Sure.
He moves to Paradise, Michigan.
Okay.
Real town. You know, there may be people out there who don't know that we have Paradise in Michigan.
But we have it in the UP. It's near to Prominent Falls, isn't it?
It is. Yes. Very close to Prominent Falls. First book in his series was called A Cold Day in Paradise.
Okay.
Lovely title.
And the title of this one?
The title of the new one is called Let It Burn. So Alex went up there to get away, but he couldn't get away, of course, because he's a detective. The crimes and the mysteries keep following him.
Okay.
And he has to live with it. So Steve's done pretty well. These books have won him big awards. He's made a lot. He's got enormous fans in the Eastern UP. I've traveled with him a little bit doing presentations in the Eastern UP.
He's a literary rock star.
Absolutely. I want to do things with Steve because, I get his audience, which is great. But in this book, Let It Burn, again, this is one that begins and ends in the UP, but most of it takes place in Detroit. Alex is drawn back in to one of the crimes he thought he solved, but it's still reverberating both in Detroit and in Alex's imagination. He hears that a man he caught and helped convict is about to get out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex, because he's never been able to forget the case, and he's just nagging feeling that there was a terrible mistake made, that not only did he help convict an innocent man, but that the real killer is still out there, still killing. So, like all crime novels, and of course you don't want any spoilers, you can't give away spoilers
for a
crime novel, but there's always the unexpected twists and turns of plot. There's lots of action. He's got great dialogue. You know, our crime writers in Michigan, I think it's the tradition of the late Elmore Leonard now, they all have to have a good ear for dialogue, and Steve has that ear for dialogue.
Okay.
And most of them keep the physical description to a minimum. But Hamilton paints the physical description of the Upper Peninsula very quickly, but he can often do it really well. And he can get that sense of both the beauty and the ominous nature of it all. It all happens there. I mean, I just wanted to share with you the very beginning of this novel. So this is from Let It Burn, brand new novel by Steve Hamilton. Summers die hard in Paradise. the first time you lived through it, and because this place still has the MI as part of the address, you might actually expect the summer to fade away slowly like it does below the bridge. Down there, on a crystal blue day in September, the sun shining hot and bright until it starts to go down, you might feel a slight note of coolness in the air, a note that makes you think of football and back to school and leaves turning and all those other bittersweet signs that the season is changing. Something so subtle you might even be forgiven for missing it the first time it happened, especially if you didn't want the summer to end. Up here, on the shores of Lake Superior, there's a cold wind that gathers at the north and picks up weight as it builds its way across 200 miles of open water. And then, on a late afternoon in August, hell, sometime in July, that wind hits you square in the face and makes its intention quite clear. No matter how much you might not like the message, summer may not be 100% done, not just yet, but it's been mortally gutshot, and it's only a matter of days until it's gone.
What a perfect passage for this time of
year. Isn't that fun? Yeah.
I have to say, I did jump onto authorstevehamilton.com, onto his website.
He's got a good website.
He does. And that excerpt from chapter one, it struck me that he's very good in the sense that I know this is a series. I'm not familiar with the other ones, but I didn't feel left out of the party.
Yeah, he's found the way of handling that. You can jump into any of his novels. He's going to give you just enough background on Alex McKnight so you get the sense of the character, but you don't need it. Every one of those books stands alone, and everyone is different, so they're great that way. On the other hand, if you do get committed to this book and you want to read all 10 novels, it's great because the character develops and changes. So he's kind of figured out a way to have his cake and eat it too.
That's good. A good writer. So good. That is authorstevehamilton.com is his website. I just tell everybody who wants to find out more about Let It Burn by UP writer Steve Hamilton.
Yep.
Next we have
this novel is a couple years older, but I've always wanted to talk about it and haven't, so I'm going to now. It's by a woman named Ellen Ergood. It's called South of Superior. It just takes place just a few miles west along the coast of Lake Superior. She calls her fictional town McAllister, but if you know Grand Marais, it's clearly Grand Marais, and that is where she lives.
Okay.
She had to make the town a little bit bigger than Grand Marais, needed a larger cast of characters to fill it out. I mean, I think Grand Marais is tiny. I think there's maybe 300 people in greater Grand Marais, and so she needed a little bit bigger, but the physical location is exactly the same, if you know, at the end of the road, surrounded by forests and swamps on three sides, and then that beautiful bay on the south shore of the largest body of fresh water in the world. Ellen herself, she lives there. She went there 25 years ago. She married the guy who owned the diner. They've been running that diner ever since, and she works, 80 hours a week this woman works.
So she's really a part of the fabric of the community.
She absolutely, and she knows them all, and it's kind of amazing. For months in the winter, they have to go to work on a snowmobile. But all this time, she's been doing all that work. She's so involved in the business and in her community. She's been writing all the time. And I'd love to figure out how she finds the time to keep it going. But she has managed to do it. Now, in this novel, South of Superior, a young woman, Madeline Stone, returns to the place of her birth after years spent down in Chicago. She needs to go back there to get over the bitterness that she feels about her upbringing and her sense that the parents abandoned her. Now, it just hit me that we've got a little motif here of people going to the UP to get psychologically or spiritually healed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably a variation on this American thing about we go to the woods to be cleansed,
yeah.
Right, or hit the river or hit the road. But the interesting that the just Upper like Peninsula Whitman. Has that. Although, yeah, exactly, yeah. And that seems to have fit a pattern for some people. Now, of course, the UP, there's some nasty things that go on there. It's not always a positive place,
sure.
But the truth will have to be told about that, or is told about that. But nonetheless, they go there, as does Ellen Ergood's character, Madeline. Now, there she finds people who need her, two little old ladies who have lived all their lives there and who are getting frail and very aged. They need her. A child who has ended up alone, not necessarily abandoned, but who's ended up alone, and he needs his support group. So then in addition to that, she finds good work. She finds good work running in a old hotel on the edge of abandonment, and it'll provide a living for her and help preserve the sense of the place. So I was thinking about what to read. There's so many things I could read in there, and I'd love to read things about her dealing with the people, but those get a little long. So I hear I did a physical description, too. Now, this is a thing from early in the novel, early in South of Superior by Ellen Ergood, where the character Madeline Stone is just arriving at this town, at McAllister, modeled on Grand Marais. And this description is just purely Grand Marais. You drive north on this road from Sini, what, 45 miles or so. It goes straight north through the swamps, and there's nothing else there but this tiny little town. If you've never been, I recommend it. It's gorgeous. So this is the view as she arrives. This is in April. The town sat at the base of a steep hill at the edge of the water, a lonely collection of buildings she could take in all in one glance from the distance. Huddled under the sleet that had been falling for hours, it looked stark and desolate and beautiful. I can interrupt myself here for a minute, Cindy.
Yeah.
Huddled under the sleet, it looked stark and desolate, period, and beautiful, period. And, you know, I think
rhythm,
absolutely. And also, I think there are a lot of people in the world who can't imagine that. Sleet, stark, desolate, beautiful.
I'm there.
Okay.
I get it.
I mean, it's a real Northern Michigan thing, or at least a Northern thing. It looked stark and desolate and beautiful. There was still snow on the ground, had been for the last 20 miles, and small icebergs bobbed near shore, waves lashing over them. Madeline had read that Lake Superior was as big as the state of South Carolina. It looked like an ocean. Without it, McAllister might have been any of the small, drab hamlets she'd driven through today. With it, and from this vantage point high above, the effect was somehow thrilling.
I love it.
And
the sense of place.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Fabulous.
And in this book, maybe even more than in the Steve Hamilton novels, in this book, it's clearly the sense of place. She clearly wants to write about the people who are around her.
Let me ask, does this kind of novel, I just finished one when I was on vacation, that it was good and it was some kind of thing, somebody coming home, and it kind of devolved into a romance, probably good for lying by the beach. But does this stay, where does this go?
I don't like that phrase, chick lit, but what you described almost sort of is what people mean by chick lit.
Yeah.
No, this book is decidedly not chick lit. Okay. I mean, yes, it is about a woman. There's a love interest, although it doesn't dominate things. It's mostly about the relationship of her and these two old ladies and boy, the child who's a little 5-year-old boy. On the other hand, I'm old enough now to cry shamelessly. And
appreciate a little love.
it's not love. I mean, this relationship between her and these two women, it was just like, yes, I remember that. I remember seeing that in my life, that people helped each other genuinely without money and, without all these things that get in the way. And she's writing about that, and she's writing about it awfully well, I think.
If you've just joined us, we are doing our seasonal check-in with the wonderful Keith Taylor, poet and writer, bringing us his picks for our autumn reading. So we've talked about Steve Hamilton's murder mystery, Let It Burn, Ellen Ergood's South of Superior, and where do we go next?
We have one other book to talk about, and this is, there may have been little regional anthologies, general anthologies of Upper Peninsula work that have been done in the past. But this is the first one I know of. It was published in the Wayne State series called Made in Michigan. It's edited by a really interesting guy named Ron Reakey. It's called The Way North, and the subtitle is Collected Upper Peninsula New Works. 44 people in there, some poets, some short story writers. It's mostly the bulk of the book is fiction, but there are some very lovely poets in there. And it's the first time that I have seen this kind of thing done, specifically about the Upper Peninsula. Now, so there are people who are from the UP and have left. There are people who have ended up moving to the UP as much to teach in one of those universities as anything else, although there are a couple who have simply moved there to and are trying to work in their writing. I have to admit that there are a few of us who have just traveled through. I've got a tiny little poem in here. Lots of the seasonal, lots of nature things, although I have to admit it's an anthology that is filled with snow and ice, and part of me likes that. I have to say the editor, this guy named Ron Rieke, is just – he's a sort of indefatigable promoter of – or advocate rather than – that's better. Advocate of Upper Peninsula writing. He's edited this anthology. He's got a couple more coming out. He organizes tours and discussions. He doesn't hide the fact that there are lots of troubles in the UP, ones that reflect American society in general, rural poverty, drugs, racism in the UP, that – being primarily directed against Native people, so that or racial tension because of that. But all the way through it, he has the sense, and he finds these things. He has the sense that there are stories to be told there, and maybe they're just a little bit different because of the location, because of the lack
above
of
the bridge,
because of the above the bridge. And that's a great thing to see. It's hard to pick out something here because it's just an anthology.
Is it all poetry, Keith?
It's just the first
short stories.
It's probably only the first 70 pages or so are poems. And then the last 200 are fiction, short stories, which include short stories by Ellen Eargood and Steve Hamilton. So he's found these people, too. But there's a wonderful poet and fiction writer named Jonathan Johnson who lives out west somewhere, but he's from Marquette, and I think he goes back to the UP as much as possible. And he wrote the introduction to this. In that introduction, he's kind of put his finger on what's unique about it. I just wanted to share a couple of passages from that introduction because I think Jonathan Johnson has found the sense of things. So this is from the introduction to The Way North, which is edited by Ron Rieke, although this passage is by Jonathan Johnson. The Upper Peninsula is the most intimate landscape I know. And you got to say he spent his childhood there. So we all have this landscape of childhood. We all feel this intimacy. So no matter where we grow up, but for Johnson, it's the UP. The most intimate landscape I know. The woods are dense and close. The mountains low and old. The rivers narrow and mostly quiet. Most of the lakes are small and dusky and dark. The tavern ceilings are low and the cabins tight around their wood stoves. All but a few of the cemeteries and neighborhoods have aged back into their leafy habitats, and shabby and gentrified storefronts collect, closed-shouldered, into outposts and a few little downtowns, each no more than a handful of lights glimpsed from the crest of a highway at night. A couple paragraphs later, and sooner and later, it's going to snow. The most intimate weather of this intimate place. Snow will transform what you thought was the endlessness around you into a space that just fits your longing, your loss, your solitude.
I'm sold.
Isn't that lovely?
That is absolutely wonderful. So that is The Way North, edited by Ron Rieke. Wonderful choices. Also, Ellen Eargood's novel, South of Superior. As Keith said, it's been out a couple of years, but deserves the attention. And Steve Hamilton's Let It Burn, a good murder mystery that starts in the UP, comes to Detroit, and then what, back up again?
Back up to the UP, yep.
Poet and writer Keith Taylor coordinates the undergraduate program in creative writing at the University of Michigan. Promise that we'll see you for our winter reading list?
Thinking about it already.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve.